Hi, and welcome. You're the fucking worst. I fucking... Anyway, I'm just glad you're here. You've made it.
Good somehow, to be here.
Some way. Good, good, good. All right. I want to thank... Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of the CD Geopolitics live stream. I want to thank you guys again for the tremendous growth and engagement on YouTube. For once, I was doing our... I do our YouTube community comments most of the time. Sometimes the guys do it. But yeah, USSR wallpaper. We'll see if you could guess where Chris is. It is in the former USSR for sure. But with growth and all the tremendous growth comes a lot more work. We're actually looking for contributors, people who want to administer the Telegram. Definitely need help on Instagram because I am Instagram retarded. We're starting to travel more and more, so we can't always be around. We need help with writing the show, video editing, anything, you name it. Obviously, there's experience, travel, and maybe compensation involved. But if you guys want to get involved, and let me just explain to you, we really just started out as a group of people that wanted to do work. That's really just it. And we just did it with our blood, sweat, and tears for the first 2 years with zero income at all. So it's a really interesting opportunity for growth, especially since we operate as like a cooperative and you take your work with you and you take your, like, it all belongs to you. If you wanted to help out with one of our platforms, I would please get involved. There's no, I'm like way out of focus. No experience necessary. If you guys are interested in getting into journalism or investigative work, this is definitely a really good opportunity to do so. But please be a self-starter. We don't have a lot of time. to like hold your hand. That's all I ask. But yes, we're very much looking to expand our team and our family. That's really what we are. But and along with that, so how are you? Are we allowed to say where you are? I didn't say.
You are allowed to say where I am.
Chris is in Crimea.
Yes.
So yes, Chris is in Russia still. He's in the wonderful Crimea. What is the weather like?
The weather, actually, I got caught in the rain tonight, but it's great. It's beautiful. It's warm and beautiful, and it was sunny today. Life is beautiful here in Crimean. The Crimean fall/winter, which is part of what?
Russia. Always, forever.
That's right.
Russia forever. We don't really have for you guys today. Not much has happened. I mean, the peace plan turned out to be a nothing burger like we predicted it would. I did translate for you guys the full 10 minutes of... told the producer before he came on, he's like, I thought you did a clip, you did the whole thing. And I was like, well, yeah, I wanted to know what he said. He talked for 10 minutes. He goes, he didn't say anything. He literally didn't say anything. There's really no update on the peace process at all. Trump was speaking live when we started streaming, but he was talking about the cafe, which is for auto workers, and they're doing something in the auto industry, some sort of little bailout. So he hadn't answered any questions from the press yet. Maybe something will come on as we're streaming. There is some news out of Europe in regards to Russia, Ukraine. So let's take a look at Mark Rutte.
Yes, well, that's really great news. So a lot of pledges have come in, and I hope I can make a few announcements later today. Pledges made today. And when you look at the overall numbers, as I said yesterday, we are now at 4 billion. So that means we are really on track for the 1 billion a month, August, September, October, November. And I'm cautiously optimistic that we will reach the 5 billion for the full year. And then for next year, we need for the full year, again, a lot of money, at least 1 billion, maybe even a little bit more than 1 billion a month. It might be around 50, maybe a little bit more for the whole year when it comes to this crucial U.S. gear. So this is offensive and defensive, including interceptors for the air defense systems, crucial to keep Ukrainian civilians and civilian infrastructure safe. So it is really good that this flow is there, that Europeans are stepping up, and Canada, by the way, also doing a lot here. So really, really glad that this is working.
That's what I said. Did he say 50 or did he say 15? Because he was like, we might need a little bit more than 1 billion a month. And then I thought he said 50. I was like, well, now you're talking 4 billion a month. What are we doing here? 1 billion a month. The Euro bros are on the hook for, at minimum. It could be up to 4, or he could have said 15 and he means just over 1 billion per month. But 1 billion per month. Wild.
The corruption scheme continues.
Exactly. I thought this was going to start winding down, especially the money laundering aspect of it.
Oh, no. It's a big cash cow.
Yeah, we talked about it last episode, the pretty much empty contracts from Anduril. Well, now there is a replica drone. They have... This is comedy, it writes itself. They've reverse manufactured the Shahed. The Americans are now reverse engineering Iranian assets. Isn't this delicious? Don't the Iranians just love this? Are there any Iranians in the chat? I hope there are. But yeah, this is fantastic. This is a huge dub for Iranians. So this is the Lucas drone. It is obviously a replica of the Shahed. It is a Delta wing configuration with long range loitering capability, almost exactly like Shahed. It cruises at about 85 miles per hour, endurance up to 6 hours, et cetera, et cetera. It's developed by Spectre Works out of Arizona in partnership with the Pentagon. But the thing is that I thought they were supposed to be a replica of the Shahed, but they cost over five times the amount. So how is this the point of the Shahed is to be kind of like, economic,
low cost.
Yes, that's the point. So $100,000 for a loitering kamikaze drone
sounds like a grift to me. Yeah, also the name Spectre Works. Spectre is in James Bond films. You know, it's the dark organization, like the secret, like world, you know, New World Order cabal. So just thought that was interesting. Spectre.
All of their names are like that. They're either like these spooky names from Lord of the Rings or like some weird like Egyptian god or like, yeah, they're all like these weird, like gross names.
Bunch of psychos.
What else did we want to talk about? Oh, Venezuela. Venezuela. So, I mean, I don't know if you've talked to anybody in Venezuela lately, Chris, but Venezuela is essentially under full, like basically a naval blockade. You have the Gerald R. Ford, which is obviously the first of its class, Ford nuclear aircraft carrier, Ford class. It has the USS Gettysburg, which is a Ticonderoga class guided missile cruiser, the USS Gravely, Jason Dunham, Winston Churchill, Stout, Sampson, all of these Arleigh Burke class destroyers. And then you have a one literal combat ship, a Los Angeles class submarine, and then a few support ships, basically putting Venezuela effectively under blockade. Have you spoken to anybody in Venezuela? I know that the air travel has been somewhat affected. I know Copa Air is still flying in and out, but what else?
I've talked to people on the ground. It is very tense. As you know, I was supposed to head over there. There's a couple of our comrades that are there on the ground.
Yeah.
I think now almost 8 airlines have been stripped of their licenses because they no longer wanted to fly. They're basically complying with the Trump, moratorium on flights to Venezuela. And the Venezuelan government basically said, if you don't resume flights, we're going to cancel your license to travel, like to actually come. So Turkish Airlines, Gol, which is out of Brazil, and a couple others are no longer flying to Venezuela. So I would take Turkish from Moscow through Istanbul directly to Caracas. Can't go.
Let you guys know, Chris is a wanted man in Turkey, so we can't go through.
Go.
Can't even fly through the airspace, right? Can you fly through the airspace?
No, no, I can. I can go through. I can go through the airspace and I can go through the airport, but I cannot enter Turkey.
Yeah. Don't worry. Yeah. Donald's fucking up my flow too. I had a full ticket to Venezuela. I would have left on Saturday, but I am, of course, afraid to go because Donald Trump, the Grinch who stole my Venezuelan Christmas, I just don't know. Like, I don't, it's too unpredictable. I just feel like I'm going to go down there and I'm going to get stuck or I'm going to get detained on the way back and it's just going to be horrendous. I'm going to end up with Alex Saab, just stranded.
Yeah. You're going to be our first DD Geopolitics martyr. Shahid!
Shahid! Stop! You have to pay $100,000 for me then.
Anyway. Oh, my God.
Well, speaking of it, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that people are saying that, like, you know, people are stocking up at supermarkets, people are stocking up at stores, people are trying to make sure that they are, you know, basically families are staying close together. People are nervous. People are very concerned. And people know that this level of violence is going to be unpredictable and devastating if the U.S. unleashes what it wants to unleash.
Also, I want you guys, like, these weird, like the Americans are kanging and they're showing, like, photos and saying, like, look at the Venezuelan army. That's not the army. That's a retired, like, they're retired army and they are volunteer militias. That's not the army. You guys keep, they keep posting these. They're like, look at these old people. I'm like, dude, that's literally, like, if your local VFW wanted to defend their country. That's not the army. Like, it's, which actually is kind of even more badass. You're like, it's just a volunteer group of older people, men and women. So it's just funny. Like, I still don't think that Americans really understand what they're getting into. I don't think that I'm not saying like Venezuelans are just going to mop the floor with Americans, but I just don't, there's a lot of kanging and a lot of really bad propaganda out there.
For sure. For sure. You know, I don't know. I'm deeply concerned and I'm also shocked that we are here again. It feels like 2003 and I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. Like, once again, I'm shouting in the void and I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know. I'm so shocked.
I've been like, I get like irrationally angry when I get to this where I'm like, I don't really know what to do with my hands. I don't know what I even talk about. I don't even know what to say. And I've just been incredibly like angry and like in a funk. I'm incredibly disappointed. I'm embarrassed. I don't really even know what to say because there's no rationality behind this mm-hmm. assault on Venezuela. So there's no real debate surrounding it. If I engage with somebody who is pro invasion, that's not a good faith position in and of itself. So there's no discussion to even be had. It's enraging. The whole thing is just grotesque.
It really is. It really is. And what's even worse is that the MAGA movement, which was trying to say no to endless wars and regime change and U.S. militarism abroad, they're the ones ramming this down all of our throats now. Like, this is somehow a patriotic thing to go and bomb Venezuela and do regime change. All in the name of drugs. Bro, you want to go after drugs? Go clean up Wall Street. Go clean up the Washington, you know, congressional staffer parties that are full of people snorting, you know, lines of coke off, you know, guys' dicks and things like that. That's what you got to go and clean up. No, I'm serious. I'm angry about this shit because these motherfuckers go out there, have a good time partying, and they're going to go destroy this country that's an innocent country. You don't like the government? Too fucking bad. Take care of your own government.
Even the other one, like even if we go the opposite, you're frozen a little bit, Chris. So but even if we go the opposite way and we say, oh, in good faith, Venezuelans don't want Maduro as their president. What the fuck does that got to do with me?
What? Yeah, exactly.
Tell them to vote him out. Handle it. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I'm not really understanding. Like, it's just. None of it makes any sense. It's all the whole thing is completely in bad faith. And speaking of bad faith, we'll check in with our secretary of the Department of Gusanos.
The Venezuelan regime is a source of instability in the entire region. Over 8 million Venezuelans have flooded into neighboring countries as a result of the regime's activities within their own country, including into the United States. They also happen to be the foothold of Iran. That's not spoken about enough. Iran, its IRGC, and even Hezbollah has a presence in South America. And one of their anchor presence, especially for the Iranians, is inside of Venezuela. So,
how true? Like, we got to bomb Venezuela to get at Iran and Hezbollah? This is the rationale behind this?
Once again, this is the same bullshit that we went through in Iraq.
WMDs. This is worse.
No, it's the same lie. Like, Saddam Hussein is working with Al-Qaeda. Bro, they're against each other. They're killing each other out there. What are you talking about? They're totally not allied. And again, Hezbollah, Iran, Venezuela access. What are you talking about? Yes, Venezuela is allied to the state of Iran, sure. But the Hezbollah, what are you talking about? Just because there's 2 million Arabs of Lebanese and Palestinian and Syrian descent that are living in Venezuela does not mean that they're Hezbollah. The majority of them are Christians anyway.
I worry about this sort of ratcheting up because it goes to, well, Hezbollah's, right now we've got Hezbollah present in parts of Syria. Now they're going to do Hezbollah as president in parts of, like, how far does this creep? We've got Hezbollah in the southern part of Lebanon. We've got Hezbollah. This is what they say. They've got Hezbollah outside of Damascus or some derivative of that. We also have a Hezbollah derivative in Iraq, which gives them all these excuses to bomb these places. And now we have Hezbollah inside of Venezuela.
Like, how far does this creep? This was the same language they used in the first Trump administration that Hezbollah was in Latin America, in Venezuela. This is not new. They used it in 2018, 2019. But you see how it's conveniently rolled out like a Trojan horse to shove down the American people's, you know, throats and now bring it back and then put it back again. Whenever they need it to conveniently. And because, remember, Gore Vidal's famous quote, people in the United States don't remember anything because the United States have amnesia, right? So obviously we're doomed to repeat this bullshit and we're doomed to have these same stupid arguments on X and on social media because people are like, oh my God, but there's terrorism down there. Bro, you already said this 5 years ago. If you were concerned about the terrorism, you would have done something. But you conveniently, you couldn't do regime change. And now, of course, it's okay. You see what I'm saying? This is bullshit. This is a problem.
I agree. I think it's much weaker line of rationale than even WMDs. At least WMDs. That's right. I actually called him out on that, Aziz. I said, why are you repeating this rhetoric? Colonel McGregor came out. It was his, let me be clear. I believe it was, wasn't it his X account that says it? I don't know if he himself said it. You got to watch because some of these people don't run their own X accounts. But I remember that when they said Hezbollah and Hamas are coming through the Mexican border. I went right on that and I was like, this is such slop. Or I was like, oh, you're doing Hezbollah now, like that was back, way back. That's like November 2023. That was like right after October 7th when they were really trying to get us like riled up and into it, but it didn't pan out because our Shia are dope. Like, I don't know whether our Shia and in the United States aren't Hezbollah. Like, I mean, even if they were Hezbollah, they're not going to attack them. I don't know. The whole thing is just very, like, weird and irrational. I mean, I posted a thing the other day that was like, forgive them, Father, for they are retarded. And it was an Israeli. And he was like, he said, if ISIS are Israeli proxies, why have they never killed Israelis? They've only killed ISIS. And I was like, I had to read it like 10 times. I was like, we're in the upside down. So, but I went viral. So thank you to anonymous Israeli who typed out stupid things. Anyway, I had this.
I feel like we're getting dumber as a species.
We are. Wait, we're probably going to close after this just because I really don't have much. But this is, speaking of dumber as a species, I found this clip just before we came on.
I think that on a sort of public policy level, reparative policies don't tend to be nearly as effective as people want them to be, historically speaking.
For Jewish people.
In what way?
Jewish people have received reparations.
You mean Holocaust reparations, for example, from Germany? So I think that, first of all, that there was like a gigantic fight actually in Israel over whether Holocaust survivors should accept reparations from Germany, because the idea was that it's allowing them to expiate their sins of the past. And they shouldn't be allowed to expiate those sins. And it's allowing them to sort of buy off the history for 50 grand or whatever it is. But that is not the reason why Israel has become successful economically, like just on a success level. The reality is that cutting people checks rarely makes them more successful from the government. What usually makes people more successful is a determined attempt to become the things that the meritocracy demands of you, right? So there were no long scale.
I do think the U.S. foreign assistance for Israel has helped financially,
though. Well, I mean, the U.S. foreign assistance for Israel actually is a bargain for the United States, because Israel doesn't need the money. I've said this before.
Well,
Israel,
give it to us. I mean, we'll take it.
That's fine.
The black community would gladly take
that. That's in it.
I can't speak for
it. It's like $3 billion a year. We should point out at this point that we spend, I think, $6 billion a year on our military bases in Japan, $5 billion a year on our military bases in Germany. We spend an awful lot of money that helps an awful lot of other countries. Israel has to spend all of that money, by the way, in the United States on military products. So all of the money that we send to it, we actually don't send money to Israel. We send military product to Israel that is made in the United States. And so it actually is a subsidy to the American defense industry. And there is a deal with Israel where Israel does intelligence sharing and also develops its own tech and can't disseminate it to the world. So, for example, the helmets that our F-35 pilots use, those are Israeli-developed helmets, like that we can see over the horizon, for example. That's because Israel developed technological add-ons. So the idea that this is sort of like a zero sum, the money goes out, we get nothing back, that's actually not true.
Reparations to the Jews following the Holocaust didn't help. We've actually debated even taking them at all, because they shouldn't be able to buy their way out of sin. Okay. And then the $3 billion a year is actually a benefit to the Americans. I don't know if you know this, Ben Shapiro, but the people that run our military industrial complex are the same people that run the Israeli military. They're all the same people. So, I mean, they're just laundering our tax dollars. What is this word salad like about reparations? You got to love we are monetized. You got to love the black person arguing with the Jew about reparations. This is just so delicious. Not that I'm on the side of I'm on the side of the African-Americans, by the way, but they're going to fight, but.
You know, what's even funny about this reparations talk, like there were some books written and articles about Jewish complicity in the slave trade. Because they also had a role to play. Right. But of course, then like some African Americans, you know, some in the wider circles have said, okay, you owe us reparations. They're yes. like, no, you owe us. What? And of course, you know, I had a friend who was, you know, who was debating this topic, and he said, did I create the concentration camp? He was like, he of course said some words that I'm not going to repeat here, but he was like, you know, we were in concentration camps, you know, as well. And they're like, no, it's not the same. It's not the same. We, you know, hierarchy.
And you know, they use this. Like, some of the smaller countries in Latin America, especially the islands in the Caribbean, those are all old standing Jewish slave owning families. That's the person that runs Haiti is a Jew who owned slaves back in his family owned slaves back in the day.
A lot of them. And, you know, you look back and you kind of, you know, analyze this and you realize, oh, my God, like they are using like some of these more Zionist, like crazy types are using decolonial theory, like kind of woke language and like, you know, critical and postmodern theory to justify Zionism and their own positions. And my mind's melting with this shit. But that's what they're doing. They totally have co-opted a lot of this stuff. They're like, no, supporting Zionism is supporting decolonization and national liberation struggle. Yeah. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. That's part of the thing that we talked about the last time. Those charities, they kind of go in and they're like, you've actually been brainwashed out. Part of the decolonization process is to bring you back into Judaism. You were brainwashed out of Judaism. It's bizarre. Correct. It's so inverted.
Correct.
Even though, by definition, Israel is a settler project. It's a settler.
Correct.
It's just, it's so inverted. It's bizarre.
It's wild.
Well, wild. I think that's really all I really had. But let's see if we have any cool super chats. No, you have the DM. This doesn't count as a DM. This is Sarah is too nice for politics. I am not nice. I am incredibly mean, but thank you. Thank you. I should make Chris read these from now on. I am a god. Yes, that's correct. I'm like Kali, the Hindu goddess of destruction, or like more like Athena, the Greek goddess.
Oh, wow. Oh, you're coming in my Greek side.
Yeah, I love Athena. She's my favorite goddess. And last, yeah, she is. McGregor and others still think Trump is listening to the wrong people. I don't think Trump's listening to anybody.
I don't think Trump listens.
No. I didn't know McGregor was a Trumper that hard. I knew he was MAGA and I knew he supported Trump, but I didn't know that he was one of those people that kind of like brainwashes himself into, I don't know. Well, whatever. No, very low energy today. Anyway, what's up?
Listen, we're going to have stuff from Crimea. I'm going to have stuff available for you on Sunday. I should have stuff. We're going to be going Sunday. So Sunday we'll have stuff for you all. We'll talk about it. I'll still be around these lower parts of Russia, but hopefully we'll have a good internet connection because, of course, you understand. But I'll tell you one thing. It is amazing to be here, amazing to see the heroism of the people, and really interesting to see the infrastructure built to deal with.
Yeah, what's it like? Talk about that for a minute so this episode's not that short. But yeah, what's it like? When did you get to Crimea?
So first of all, you got to take a train from Moscow to Crimea. There's no flights because, of course, there's been no flights since 2022. Right. And even earlier, there were limited options. I think Rostov has been closed for a longer time than that. So there really weren't opportunities. But you have to drive down or you have to take a train down.
Did you take the train?
I took a train.
Was it so nice?
It was amazing. It's a four-person cabin, and I was the only one in the cabin, so it was so comfortable for the whole trip.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was really cool.
I would so do that.
It was so cool. I mean, one of the best parts was... So the trip took, in total, 29 hours from Moscow to Crimea, to Simferopol. The best part was we stopped before the Kerch Bridge. Mm-hmm. And basically, they came around, and usually what they do is they close the blinds so we can't see the bridge and we can't see what's going on out there. But they didn't close my blind. So I got to see all of the defensive like structures built to like defend the bridge. And as we were going, I saw some really cool, like something, it was like straight out of World War II, like armored trains with like anti-aircraft stuff and like missile launchers and things. I was like, holy shit. I was like, oh my god, this is the real deal. So we passed the bridge and got in there, and Crimea is absolutely beautiful. I mean, it reminds me of Greece. It was once of the Greek colonial holdings in the Black Sea.
Yeah, most people don't know that, like, Mariupol is left over from the Greeks, you know, like polis.
Oh yeah.
Like Americans won't put two and two together. But.
Yeah, yeah. So the Greeks had this territory since, you know, BC time. So it's amazing, and a lot of archaeology and ruins and temples and all sorts of stuff. So anyway, got to Simferopol and was able to go to the areas like where I took that picture outside the government building that made, you know, the NAFO crowd meltdown, which I love. And I went to some monasteries like St. Luke of Crimea, which was amazing because when I was in Kursk, I went to the hospital where he worked at, and it was just amazing, the history and how it connects with the Soviet times because he lived during the Soviet Union. And after that, came over and I visited so far Yalta and Sevastopol. Yeah. And Sevastopol was amazing because, of course, that's the naval. That's where the Black Sea Fleet is. Sevastopol, right. So it was unbelievable, unbelievable, unbelievable. I got to hang out with a captain, like a ship's captain who was in the Navy for like 36 years, a very prominent officer. And he kind of showed me around the whole city and told me about the whole history. And then we went to this beautiful, unbelievably gorgeous complex that has the church where Vladimir was baptized, like where the whole Rus eventually got, you know, converted to Orthodox Christianity. It was unbelievable. The whole thing was mosaic, top to bottom. So it was unbelievable. Hung around there, got to see the old ancient ruins of the Greek city. And it's just been amazing to see. And life continues. Of course, there are drone alerts. We've had a couple drone alerts while we were here. But people are getting by normally. People are, you know, life continues. And people are happy. Of course, not everyone is happy to be with Russia, but the vast, vast majority are.
What about people who aren't? Why aren't they?
The people who aren't are a small minority. Most people have left. They were, you know, people were like, ah, like 5-6% maybe at most are unhappy. Everybody else is super happy, super patriotic. You see flags everywhere, St. George ribbon. Oh my God. We went down to in the harbor. You had the flag of, you had the imperial flag, the Russian tricolor, the Soviet victory banner.
Yeah, that's the best.
And the Christ banner. So yep. It was four flags. And I was like, oh my God, this is badass. But, you know, they had all the heroes. And actually in Crimea, Kadyrov is really glorified as a
really?
Hero. Because
Muslim?
Well, so this is how it happened. So during the Russian Spring, and when Crimea was undergoing its transformation and basically voting to come to Russia, Kadyrov came to appeal to the Muslim community because Turkey and a lot of other countries tried to get involved and push the Muslims to go against Russia. But Kadyrov was basically like, look, we're all part of the Russian fabric and you know, part of the Russian family. And we, you know, ask you to support Russia. And so he was able to appease a lot of the Tatars' concerns about being a Muslim minority in Crimea. Ah. And there was a beautiful picture of him in the town square, and he had his, you know, hero of the Russian Federation and a bunch of other Chechen leaders. So that was amazing. Locals were explaining to me that, you know, he really, you know, changed the course of the Muslim community in Crimea. So I was very interested in that. I was very surprised. And it shows the beauty of also the interaction of Muslims within Russia. He also appealed to them to unite with their Tatar relatives in Kazan. He was like, aww, you know, as part of, you know, the glory, you know, come back to Russia. And now we have the Crimean Tatars and the, you know, Tatarstan, right, with the Kazan Tatars. They can unite. So now they're united in one Russia. So I thought that was beautiful. Really nice.
Your Hajjan says your beard is growing and very nice. You guys know they call him, they call Chris. Am I allowed to tell him his Russian nickname? They call Chris in Russia, they call him Baby Isis. Yes, Baby Isis. So
they teased me because I was in Syria. So they're like, Baby Isis, because I had a mustache. In Syria, I had a mustache because Ocalan, you know, Biji Ocalan, Biji Kurdistan. So I had to have the mustache from, you know, the north. I mean, come on, I'm with the Kurds and the Turkomans and the Arabs in the north. So it's, you know. I look like a carbon copy of my dad. I was like, oh my God, it's my Baba Jan, you know.
All right, guys. Well, at least we end on a high note. Thank you so much for your donation, regular guy. And thank you guys for joining us. Again, I want to stress we are looking for contributors, and we have a lot of work, whatever, get in where you fit in type of stuff. Like I said, we're a co-op that we have people around the world. So we're always looking to expand, and your work is your work. It belongs to you. You take it with you. But we are really looking for help with the Telegram, Instagram, the show. Somebody in the chat said they want a 7-day a week show. Well, then I'm a Nazbol, but Curse is a communist. Like, this needs to be a joint effort. Like, we need help. If you want a 7-day a week show, you gotta. Okay. Everybody.
Oh, we're there. We're ready.
Find us on Twitter, Telegram. You can message the bot. You can email us at ddgeopolitics@proton.me. That's the best way to go, or the Telegram bot. Hands down, are the easiest ways to contact us, because we're terrible with our Twitter messages. So But yeah, that's all we have for you guys today. Hopefully something always happens between now and Sunday. Wednesday show's always low energy. But yeah. We love you guys. Thank you so much for joining. Keep reading, keep watching, and we will see you in the spaces and on Wednesday. Have a good one.
See you all soon. Lots of love.
Lots of love.